Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Tech Done Different Podcast with Ted Harrington. Do you follow the pack or challenge the status quo? Join Ted as he explores how to succeed by going against conventional wisdom. You'll hear leaders in technology and security tell stories about how they achieve their success by doing things differently. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Tech Done Different. I'm your host, Ted Harrington, and with me here today is our special guest, Marcus Bullock, the CEO of Flickshop. Marcus, thank you so much for being on the show here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really, really grateful to be here today.
Oh, the gratitude goes in both directions, man. As I was mentioning to you right before we hit the record button, I'm just in awe of you in so many ways. And you know, the hardships that you've been through and how you've come out the other side, not just better for it, but the way that you have made the world around you really a positive place as a result. And maybe that's where we can start a little bit. I was in preparing for this show, I was watching your TED Talk, and you talked about your path from incarceration to entrepreneurship, to helping families impacted by incarceration and really what you've done for that community. So maybe you could help our listeners just so they understand the context of kind of you and your background. Could you just tell the version of that story for us?
I mean, Ted, first I'll start by saying, you know, having expressed in a moment of gratitude, even, you know, for being able to be on the show. I mean, I think that you guys are doing incredible work and telling awesome stories to be able to include Flickshop and myself inside of a list of incredible folks that have already been on the show. I'm super grateful for it. You know, as the listeners will surely understand why I say this, but I'll say that, you know, I'm probably one of the least likely people to have ever ended up on this show. And so I'm always grateful for that. And I think it's important to be able to say that and even acknowledge it, one, for my own sanity, because for so many years, there was a slam door around every corner, under every rock. There was like someone pulling the rug up under me when I thought that the success path was imminent. Like I knew that there was going to be something, you know, on the other side of my yellow brick road that resembled a pot of gold. And when I wasn't seemingly able to ever reach that pot, the moments became bleak. This new season that I'm in is an incredible one, and I'm super grateful for it. I think to be able to just give the audience an opportunity to be able to learn a little bit more about who I am and who Flickshop is. And we can talk a little bit more about some of the stuff that I talked about, whether it be in my TED or any of the other conversations I have, I'm blessed to be able to have now around the globe. But you know, we wanted to ensure that we were building a company, and I'll talk about it in a second. We wanted to build a company that was intentional about connecting families in some of the places where most folks will think that's the least deserving, which are in prison cells. We knew that there were almost 11 million people that were incarcerated around the globe. And even here domestically in the United States, there are over 2 million, so almost 2.3 million people that are sitting behind cells. And we wanted to be able to figure out how to reduce recidivism levels, meaning, you know, reduce the rate of return back to prison when people are released, and thinking about how we could do that with tech and how we can scale it with innovation. I'm super excited about us finding ways to be able to reduce recidivism and using tech to be able to do it. But again, like I tell you, man, like now this new chapter is pretty incredible, because I never thought that I would be able to be here leading this kind of company, having this kind of impact around the globe.
Yeah, and you certainly are having impact, no doubt about it. And what really strikes me as super interesting about your story and why when I was learning about your story, I'm like, talk about Tech Done Different. I mean, this is the definition of it. I don't want to put words in your mouth. You can tell a better description of the problems that you guys are solving. But it sounds like what you noticed from your time behind bars was that you were not just physically cut off from the world by physical bars, but you were also cut off from a communication standpoint in terms of, you know, you could only use the payphones that were monitored and only had limited access to them. You certainly had no social media, no email, and all these life events were happening in the world around you and you had no access to them. And when your mom would send you these pictures of just daily life stuff, like of a cheeseburger or a mattress or whatever, that was everyone in your housing unit wanted to see them because there was this connection to the outside world. And when you got out, you said, how can I replicate that? And it sounds like that's what you guys have done, is you've made the process easier to share images and to share ideas between loved ones and loved ones behind bars. And what really strikes me about this, and I'm curious to your mindset of how you got there, was you've taken the sort of, you've applied technology in a very analog way. You said, let's have an app that people can use a picture from their phone in order to send a physical postcard. Like, that's, tell me about that. That is like the inverted way of thinking about tech. I love it.
Nah, thank you again. All right, so let's bring all of our listeners up to speed. Let's let them know what you and I both know about what we're building here at Flickshop. Now, Flickshop, we wanted to build the technology that was kind of sort of, it resembled what you would see in a social media platform and how you and I connect every day. We understand that the connection to our uncle, our cousin, our best friend, our mother, our dad, our children through these social platforms are a centralized piece to the way that we move about the world. The sad reality of it is that the millions of people that are sitting in prison cells don't have access to some of those same technologies. They don't have access to internet, easy emailing, social media platforms, texting, easy phone calls that we can spend tons and tons of time on, FaceTime. They don't have access to these technologies. So this means that there are millions of people that are sitting in jail cells, prison cells, ICE detention centers, right? Like all around the country. And they are not able to stay connected to the people that love them and support them the most, despite the decision that they did, that the mistake that they made in order to land them where they're sitting in these cells. Now, what that meant was that the people that were there that were going to also be returning back to our communities, we know that 95% of the people in jail or prison are going to come home one day. That means that 600,000 people every year are going to be returning back to yours and my community. And we wanted to figure out how to be able to help create a pathway to success for all of these folks, just like I was blessed to have, because as you alluded to, I went to prison when I was a 15-year-old kid. I carjacked a man in a shopping mall parking lot. I got sentenced to 23 years to life by a judge at 15 years old. That judge suspended 15 of those years and told me I had to serve all 8 of them, but I had to serve 8 of them in adult maximum security prisons. Now, growing up as a teenager, as a 15, 16, 17-year-old in prison, I can honestly say without a shadow of a doubt, literally by far was the most challenging thing that I've ever had to do in my entire life. Just trying to navigate through all of this psychological and the effects that were happening, that were just being thrown at me as a result of this community that I was thrust into, it was a challenge for me. And interestingly enough, I suffered from one of the same things that many people in some of those cells suffer from, whether they're 15, 16, 17 like I was, or 40, 50, 60, 70 years old like some of my best friends that I grew up with inside of these cells, which was depression. The time that's spent there will beat up on you so much that the psychological impact far outweighs even the physiological detriment that you think that you're going to succumb to when you go into prison. And what my mom saw when she started to see me crippling, turning into this angry teenager, just using the worst language, never thinking that I would make it out of this prison cell, thinking I was going to die in prison because my best friend and my cell partner was 40 years old with a life plus 43 sentence. Like, this was like my new world and my new normal. And I wanted to ensure that my mom knew that she could start grieving for me now, because there was no way that I was going to make it through that. I mean, I had to spend my 16th birthday, 17th birthday, 18th birthday, 19th birthday, 20th birthday, 21st birthday, 22nd birthday, 23rd birthday, growing up, experiencing puberty inside of these prison cells, right? Like, this was a part of my life. And my mom made a decision when she started to see me cripple and just like try to push her away, because I didn't want my mom having to go through that. Like, I didn't want my mom having to come visit me in a prison visiting room and be succumbed to stripped down searches and, guards yelling at her and screaming at her and being demeaning and dehumanizing, not to just me, but everyone that would come and love me for a few minutes. And my mom said, boy, you have lost your mind if you think that I'm letting you go to this prison culture and this way of thinking. There's a mental stamina that you're going to have to develop while you're here, because you need to know that there's life on the other side of those walls. And my mom made a promise in that moment to send me a picture or write me a letter every day from that day forward, which I had 6 years left on a prison sentence when my mom realizes. I mean, I'm 2 years in, 17 years old, 6 years left. And my mom is like, listen, I'm going to send you pictures of food and mattresses and wallpaper at my work and all of the crazy pins on my desk that I collect after all of these conferences that could have been emails, right? Like, my mom is writing letters and communicating this with me. And what it did was it not only allowed me to be able to have a window to the world that she saw, but like you alluded to, my friends, my same peers, the best friends that I began to create and, you know, cultivate relationships with, they began to live vicariously through my mom's letters and photos. And so we did want to be able to create that same level of love and adoration that my mom had created for me while I was in prison when I came home. Now, it was several years later after my release when we were able to finally drum up enough support, financial resources, and even the knowledge base, because you, as you can imagine, like, I'm 23 years old coming out of prison, can't even really explain where I've been for the almost the last decade of my life, with my last grade completed being the 10th grade, right? And mind you, this is all, I went to prison in 96, right? This is all before the internet, you know, got big, right? Like, you know, when I went in, there people didn't even have computers in their homes. When I came home, there was Google. Like, my whole brain exploded when I saw how much access to technology and what the future had already begun to look like while I sat resting inside of a cell. It was a very interesting time for me, and I'm super grateful for my mom, because had it not been for her during that time, I would have never been able to come up with the ideas that will allow me to now create the platform that now over 170,000 families have used to be able to send almost 700,000 postcards to people in prisons all around the country.
Dude, that's such an amazing story. And by the way, your mom's awesome. talk about a missed opportunity. Why, we should have your mom on this show. Why is she not part of this podcast right now?
Oh man, yeah, my mom's incredible. I'm so grateful for her. She saved my life, literally.
Yeah, it really sounds like she did. And it sounds like puts it into such sharp contrast the importance that these interpersonal dynamics are. You know, I don't know how many of our listeners have themselves gone through incarceration, but I imagine it's probably not the majority of them. And they might be thinking about some of the things you said, right? About how relationships are sort of severed in a certain way. And even just the way you described, you know, some of your best friends growing up, like that's a crazy turn of phrase when you think about it. Like, some of your best friends growing up you met because you were in prison, and you're obviously a, you know, positive person. You overcame depression, and that's really powerful to hear. And I'm curious about an element of your post-release journey, because I think there's elements of the story that could be really directly applicable for our audience who themselves maybe haven't gone through the same exact challenge you've gone through, but have faced constraints themselves. So, and correct me if I'm misinterpreting what you went through, but I would imagine that when you decided you wanted to start this company, you probably faced some barriers. You probably had, as you said, you didn't have much formal education, like hadn't graduated high school. You didn't have a lot of work experience. And here you were, you needed some financial resources to start a company. And yet you were a convicted felon. And so a bank probably isn't willing to loan and things like that. So now they're not the same, I think, for everyone who's starting a company, but everyone is up against constraints, which is you need money to do things. You need credibility you don't have. You need experience you don't have. Everyone says you're not good enough. You certainly saw that to an extreme. How did you overcome that? And what's the advice to someone else who's facing constraints? How do they overcome it?
Absolutely. You know, I think that's an awesome question. One of the things I think that you led with, I thought was really, really interesting is, you know, you're probably right, right? The majority of the listeners probably may have never experienced incarceration. And if they did, you know, maybe someone got arrested for, you know, having a few too many drinks and on the way home or something and had to spend one night in the jail or something, right? But the reality of it is that what I've learned through just all of the sheer data that we're collecting along this journey, because what most of us entrepreneurs in 2021 have now learned that we're all either media companies or data companies in real life, right? Like, no matter what kind of business that you're starting, you're either a media company first, and then you're a data company second, and then you're whatever else that you're building. But at any rate, one of the things that we've learned through a lot of the data that we have collected was that 1 in 6 people in the United States are directly impacted by incarceration. Right? I mean, that's a staggering number. So one, I just kind of want to pause and give the listeners the permission to feel okay with knowing that there's someone in their family or one of their best friends that may have all also suffered my same fate, right? And what does it mean to kind of sort of recharacterize what the possibilities are for some of those same family members and some of those same friends that have come out of those cells? And how many of the next legion of Marcuses are waiting around the corner with levels of support that my mom gave to me? Maybe it's a mother, a brother, a best friend, a coworker, or even a previous employer, but one of us, all of us, some of us, and maybe most of us, probably know someone that's been incarcerated. And so I want to be one of the ones that kind of sort of change the perception of what the humanity looks like and how we can empathize for the people that are coming out of these cells. Now, that's one thing I want to kind of sort of put a flag on. But getting back to your original question around some of the barriers, I mean, you're right. I mean, right? Like, the barriers were astronomical, right? I mean, let's not kid ourselves. One, I mean, I'm walking around with a big F on my chest. I mean, now it stands for flick shot. But, you know, when I first came home, it's still for felony. And that felony wasn't going anywhere. Right. Like, and I mean, I applied for jobs and folks literally, like, it would get down to the point where on a job application, where I would click on that checkbox that had that question, have you ever been convicted of a felony? And literally the application would just go blank. Yeah. Right. Like, you know, or someone would, like, the interviewer would look at this application and they would almost burst out laughing in tears, like, dude, you know, goodness well, when you came to apply for this job that we were going to hire you. I mean, did you not know that you had a car jacket on your record? You had to know that you had a car jacket on your record. You knew when you came here, we weren't going to give you a job, right? And here's the interesting thing about resilience and grit. And this is gets down to the meat and potatoes of your question. The reality of it is that, you know, I was able to walk out of each one of those jobs. In fact, I kept a journal of it. There were 41 of them that told me no. It wasn't until the 42nd job at the paint store where I became a guy who was mixing paint that they would give me a final opportunity. The first 41 people told me no, and just looking for a job. We aren't even going to get into what it took to be able to raise capital and get to angel investment and venture investment and learning how to be able to build teams and understanding technical requirements to be able to build this kind of technology, because I'm not a technical founder. Those are completely different barriers that I wouldn't even know that I would have to try to figure out ways to be able to overcome that will come much later in life. But just trying to figure out how to get a job in and of itself was very challenging. And one of the things that I was able to call on during those moments of continued rejection was the reality that, like, bruh, just a few months ago, you was in a cell hustling honey buns in a cell. The audacity of you to come home and complain that somebody ain't gonna give you a job. Dude, your best friends will literally cut off their right arm to have the problem of being able to, oh, how dare you? You gotta get up and go up every day in the free world and look at people and smile and shake people's hands and give people dap and explain to someone why you're worthy enough to come contribute to the world this way. Oh, poor you, yeah. Right? And that's how I perceived myself. It's like, there's so much audacity that I had to complain. And I'm like, dude, stop it now. Stop it now, right? And just failure, consistent failure. And my failure was I carjacked somebody, made a horrible decision, and got sentenced at 15 years old, 8 years. I mean, how much more of a failure can you get as a teenager, right? Having such a massive failure to lean back on allowed me to see every opportunity as an opportunity to be able to go up. So anytime someone said no, I'm like, oh, okay, great. Thank you so much for taking just a few minutes to even speak to me. I can't believe that you took 15 minutes just to talk to me. And you did that with a smile on your face. I'm so grateful. Having that level of gratitude in every conversation allowed me to be able to prepare myself mentally for the pending success that was right around the corner, which ended up as a job inside of the paint store. And if I call back on those lessons learned about what it took to be able to call back on the grit that it took to go get through my worst scenarios, my worst situations, the worst parts of my life, I learned that in those future years, I'm able to be like, Marcus, you're real petty for thinking that this life's supposed to be gravy to you. Like, dude, just a few years ago, you was literally arguing about sports plays or the prison rec yard and letting somebody tell you when you could go to the bathroom. Chill out, man. You're having a great life right now. Perspective is everything.
Totally, man. Perspective is everything. That's a great way to summarize everything you just said. I mean, I love about you that you're so self-deprecating, but those are, you know, real perspectives that you had there. And you said something that, man, is so powerful. I want to write this on a t-shirt. You know, the having that gratitude prepared you for your pending success that's right around the corner. And I mean, man, if you can barrel through those barriers in order to achieve your own success, I think anyone listening to this who keeps getting denied funding or misses out on that next great hire or loses on that great customer to their competitor, that everyone will be able to say, hey, maybe I can think like Marcus and say, thank you. This is preparing me for the next thing. So that's really, really awesome insight, Marcus. And you mentioned opportunity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sorry. No, go ahead.
No. I just wanted to double down on that, right? Like, absolutely. I have to mentally prepare myself even now as a CEO. One of the biggest, you know, things that we're working on now in our company is building out a new SaaS product. We've always had a direct-to-consumer product that connects you back to your best friend or your cousin that's in jail. But now we're building a product that's connecting corporations and organizations, nonprofits, NGOs back to people that are in sales to be able to help them provide with everything, the basic needs, healthcare, mental health services. Like we want to be able to become the communications tool that all of these organizations and businesses are using in order to be able to transform our system. But I'll tell you, along the journey, I am going to miss out on customers. I'm going to miss out on funding opportunities. Folks are going to tell me no, and for all of the craziest reasons to me, right? But each one of those times, right? What the last funder, the last potential investor. They came and they told us, no, absolutely not, Marcus. We won't write you the check because we just don't understand the TAM for your market, the total addressable market size for your market. We didn't understand it. We don't know the magnitude of it. And we want to be able to invest in this. Then we need to know that your TAM is big enough. And we had to go into a whirlwind of how in the future pitches, we were going to be able to articulate how large the TAM was and what the possibilities were for a market size, as well as what a subscription model can do for our SaaS product in order for us to be able to continue to facilitate a growth trajectory. Now, the reality of it is that we wouldn't have gotten to a place, one, to convince ourselves as a company that this was a feasible model for us, but also how to articulate that to the open market to allow someone else to feel it valuable enough to invest in us. Had we not gotten shut down that day, our entire pitch deck would have not gone underneath the transference that happened that allowed us to be able to now get to a point where we were able to successfully raise a seed round. Those no's are what it took in order for us to learn to get to the yeses. I'm super grateful for every one of them because there's an opportunity.
I love it, man. The no's help you get closer to yes. Yeah, that's powerful stuff for sure. So you certainly are someone who can identify opportunity. And I think that a lot of people listening to this show are themselves constantly looking out for opportunity. Is it whether that's in terms of their own professional advancement, you know, getting promoted or something or moving to some other company or opportunities in the marketplace that they can address. And you tell this story about your experience in the paint shop, you know, that first job that finally you could, as a convicted felon, you know, have this job and you turned it into this sort of brokerage business almost where you're connecting the supply of paint with the people who did the service of painting. Can you tell a little bit about that story, but especially from the perspective of helping people think about how to identify and then capitalize on opportunities as they present themselves?
Holy crap. Listen, let me tell you, all of the gold comes from opportunity, the ability to be able to dream, and figuring out how to be able to build out the executable systems that will allow you to be able to scale your idea, right? So, and let's bring out all three of those really quickly. The opportunity, now in my scenario, you know, I'm here working at the paint store, I'm mixing up paint, you know, like everybody else that works in a paint store. You know, you go to the Home Depot, any other department store, and a home improvement store, and you ask for your, you know, whistle, what is it? What was the big blue? It was like, whistle sky blue or something like that. That was like the number one color. Everybody wanted that color back in 2004, 2005. I'm telling you, like it was like the color that everyone wanted. And I would come in and I would mix up this paint. and I would give it to you as the customer. And the customers, they would ask me, Marcus, well, you know, because I'm always the one that's super excited, right? Like, I just came out of prison, right? And I got a job, and I'm like making my mom excited, right? Like, I'm winning right now. This is like the best opportunity ever. I am like super winning. So I'm like the one, hey, how's it going? Let's go. Let's get your day started. What can I get for you? I'm so that guy, right? And every day I'm this guy. And folks will wonder, Marcus, why are you so excited to be able to be out here mixing paint? And what I was able to communicate very easily is that every opportunity that I had to be able to meet someone, it was different than what I had experienced over the almost last decade of my life. So it was constant dopamine every time someone approached the counter, right? And so what that did for me is gave me now the opportunity again to be able to reach out to a customer base that I didn't even know I was solving the problem for and figuring out how to build a solution that I could eventually monetize from. Now, that solution initially ended up becoming a painting business because while the customers were wondering how they could work with this excited young man that was mixing their paint, they would also wonder how much this young man would charge to come and paint their home, because if he was this excited about mixing paint, then we want him to put the paint on our kitchen walls. And so they were like, Marcus, how much do you charge to paint my kitchen? I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't paint kitchens. I'm going to sell you this Whistle Sky Blue so you can paint your own kitchen. Don't get out of here, Ms. Johnson. And you know, interestingly enough, you know, now it's like 2005, you know, this pending recession that everyone is talking about is on the way. And the painters will come into the store. They will talk about layoffs that were happening across the construction industry. And they're like, oh my gosh, there's no work. It's slow. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, the Ms. Johnsons and the world come in every day and want us me to paint their kitchen. A light bulb goes off. And I create a painting business that becomes the conduit between the painters of the paint store and the Ms. Johnsons of the paint store. Next thing we know, I'm brokering painting deals, connecting folks to all types of opportunities. Now, and eventually that led to me having, you know, growing this painting business that was able to finally secure some larger commercial contracts and some nice size residential contracts that, you know, pushed me out of that painting store business. I couldn't do it any longer. I couldn't manage this one growing painting business that I was blessed to be able to have, and also with working at the paint store. And eventually another opportunity came about when my same friends that saw me, the same ones I grew up in those sales, they saw me growing this new business that I had learned how to be able to grow. And this kind of sort of pinpoints to that last one I talked about, which was finding the systems and the executables in order to be able to grow a business. Because I knew that I was building, and I learned that what I was building systems in that painting business that allowed me to be able to grow. And I can talk about some of those details later or maybe on a future show. But what it allowed me to be able to do and learn is that while my friends were complaining about my inabilities to be able to write them back and send them pictures back to them the same way that my mom did for me when I was sitting in those sales, a light bulb goes off again. And I'm like, wait a minute. Like, there's apps out here to help me get my coffee quicker. Like, there has to be an app that can help me. I mean, there are millions of people in prison, right? I mean, there has to be an app to be able to solve this problem. And when there wasn't one, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to Google this. And we Google how to build a mobile app. And then later on became Flickshop. We were able to take some of those same systems that we built while we were learning how to create a painting business, replicate them and bring them over into the tech company. And we realized it wasn't just the business or the industry. It was learning how to take how to ideate and how to build the system that allowed us to be able to build a success path going forward. I'm super excited about what's happening as a result of those lessons learned back in those earlier days.
Yeah. You seem excited. I can see. I love it. I'm like so engaged in everything that you're saying right now. I want to talk to you for like 8 hours. So one of the things that I understand that you do is you're also trying to teach these principles to other. You've sort of set up this school of business, as you call it. Is the idea here that what you're trying to do is you're trying to take the foundations of those lessons you've learned and those systems that you've built, and to help others say, like, here's what I did, here's how you might do it? What's the thinking behind all this?
Absolutely. I mean, I can't have the continued success without taking a moment to express continued gratitude to my community for teaching me, you know, along the journey, and then also now becoming some of the same consumers of my product. And I enjoy that, you know, I enjoy the benefits of that and our company does and our community does. And so what I learned, you know, while building Flickshop was that, you know, one of the best ways to be able to show gratitude was to be able to show folks what you learned along the journey and share with them so that we can create an entire ecosystem and create a wave of future or potential Marcuses. I'm the before. There's 600,000 people that are coming home in 2021 that are going to be the after. And if we're being very thoughtful about what it is that we're building, then we can take the principles of knowing that the teacher learns the most. Meaning that if I just take that moment to share what I've learned along the journey, one, it allows me to be able to impart so much wisdom and triumph into a legion of folks who need the inspiration and motivation to keep pushing forward. Because as we all know, entrepreneurship is just hard. I mean, it's just hard. I don't care what you're doing. It's just hard, right? And so we need that kind of stuff, that push, that nudge to say, hey, listen, you can do it. You can't be what you can't see. And a lot of people that are coming out of prisons, they don't have typical Marcuses in their communities that the same ones I grew up in. And so how can I lend myself to be able to be that resource to others? And again, the other thing is, if you're not teaching, you're dying. And so when I'm realizing that I'm teaching the same principles that I believe that I'm writing on some of these same whiteboards that are sitting behind me, I'm learning that those principles are becoming more and more embedded inside of my mindset and inside of how I'm producing some of those same executables and systems that I'm preaching, all because I just wanted to be able to show my gratitude along the journey by bringing people along with me. I'm excited about what we're doing with the Flickshop School of Business as well as a result of that. But I'll tell you, that's not even a part of our big business model. That's just an opportunity to be able to, again, show gratitude back to our community. And this is the way that I chose to be able to make sure that we are able to do that in an efficient way with efficacy, at least during this season.
Yeah, man, I love it. Certainly the theme of gratitude and appreciating the opportunities we have around us. That's something that is woven throughout everything that you're saying here. I think it's an incredibly powerful reminder that we should all have. And this is completely unrelated, but the irony, the coincidence is really stark to me that like an hour before you and I got on the phone, I was feeling a lot of gratitude myself this morning. I just put this post on LinkedIn that was basically like, what are you grateful for? You know, comment or mention a person in the comments here so we can all start like generating that good vibe. And then here we are like 60 minutes later and you're preaching the same thing. Like, yes, we're so aligned on the power of gratitude. Totally, man. So
yeah. I'm grateful for your law of attraction as well. Thank you for putting those vibes out into the energy out into the earth today. I mean, it may have shown up earlier and, you know, right before we got on the call, even on our side, it translates over to me and I'm sure it's going to transfer over to so many of our listeners today.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah. I guess if there's a call to action, of which there will be many, maybe one is for everybody today, go express gratitude today, right? That should certainly be a takeaway that everyone has.
I love that.
You mentioned teaching, and I like the way you framed teaching and by extension mentorship as well as truly an expression of gratitude. And you use this phrase that I wrote down, and I'm going to have like a wardrobe of t-shirts of stuff that you said, because it's, you're like a walking quote machine. You said, if you're not teaching, you're dying. And I love that. I mean, I have a mentor from my own life who said the best way to learn is to teach. And that has stayed with me for my whole career and is something that I'm trying to impart on the people that I'm in the fortunate position to mentor. So how do you think you would recommend to others who are listening right now to go, how might they start their process of teaching or mentoring if they haven't already done so?
You know, I think this conversation is a great place to be able to start. How better place, what better fitting place to be able to start doing with conversations that look like these. The majority of the folks that I would presumptively would be listening to conversations like this, again, typically have never met a Marcus. They haven't met a guy who was a part of a carjacking that put a gun out on someone in a shopping mall parking lot, demanded their keys, ended up going to prison, did hard time. I mean, got into fist fights with some of the biggest, burliest people in a prison rec yard, survived it all, came home and then started a business and sat in the White House and talked about how we can now reform some of the same justice laws that sent me to prison as a kid when I was 15 years old. That long story probably doesn't live in the majority of the friend circles that are listening to this podcast. So what I'll say to that is, when I think about, you know, how you leverage the learn, the teach and learn model is to be able to, one, have a very, very simple, I have a very simple ask. Change the dinner table conversations. I just want this one conversation that you and I are having right now to reshape the dinner table conversations that are going to be had all across the globe as a result of the listeners that listen to a new Marcus, a new friend that they have never met before, the new person that they're following on Instagram. Follow me on Instagram, follow me on Twitter, and engage with me. Come and say hello, because I would definitely love to be able to meet you. And the reality of it is that when you, because when you change the dinner table conversations, you change the hearts and the minds of the people that are impacted by some of the same vantage points that you're bringing your perspective to. And when you do that, then you're changing policy. And then you're changing your community. And when you change your community, you do what so many have said, including Mother Teresa back in the day. You can't change the world until you change your own doorstep. When you change your community, you change your own doorstep, and that changes the world. This is how we impact the world, and we have massive impact. Now, I started this entire conversation by saying that we wanted to be able to build the scalable tech that's going to reduce recidivism. We want to reduce it by half over the next 5 years. And if we're going to be able to keep people out of these prison cells, we have, which is a massive elephant that we're going to try to attack, then we have to have these small micro bite-sized pieces of love that are being injected inside of that elephant and allow it to be able to fall. How do we do that? By changing the dinner table conversations.
Oh man, that's so good. So powerful. What you're essentially talking about is, in order to change bigger things well beyond ourselves, we have to start as close to us as we are. And, you know, the dinner table is sort of the metaphor as you're describing it. And one of the things that we're always advocating for within my company, I have a security consulting company, is we're always saying, look, our ethos is be better. And the way you do that, though, is each individual has to work to get better, and then has to make their peers better, and then has to make the company better. And if we do those things, we can make the world around us, we can make our customers better. You can't start with making the customer better if you don't know how to make yourself and the things closest to you better. And it sounds like that's very similar to what you're saying. Start the conversation at the dinner table, and eventually it expands outward to the world around you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love the way that you articulated that.
Awesome, man. Well, Marcus, this has been an absolute pleasure. I wish I could have you on the show every day. And as we wrap up here, what's the future like? What's coming around the corner in your neck of the woods?
You know, like I said, you know, we're spending a ton of time working on product and ensuring that we're building the right agile framework to allow us to be able to connect more of our corporate partners back to a social impact footprint that they can be proud of. There are people that are running some of the world's leading organizations that are being very thoughtful about how they can leverage this interesting time in this moment in time, and they can become more driven to do the socially impactful socially impactful projects that will allow us all to be able to create a better environment for our children to grow up in. So we're excited about helping to build the focus groups that will teach us how to build the technologies to do just that. I'm excited about that. So all of the incredible partners that are thinking about ways to be able to increase their social impact footprint, I can't wait to meet any of you guys, the corporate social responsibility folks, the ESG folks. These are some of my best friends right now that I'm talking to and trying to figure out how to be able to collaborate with them to be able to deliver on some of the projects that they're excited about doing, working on in 2021. One of the things that I'm thinking that I'm most proud of is figuring out how to be able to channel some of the energy that my two small children have at 10 and 4 into my everyday life so that I can push through. Because how crazy is this world where I have to sit in the house and listen to daddy all day and try to figure out how to have the patience to manage a successful business while also managing a successful company. There's a lot of energy in my home, and so I try to find balance between building a SaaS product and being a good dad.
Well, I think you are uniquely positioned to do well at that. So Marcus Bullock, thank you so much for being on the show. And everybody else, as you want to learn more about Marcus or potentially appear as a guest yourself, just head over to tedharrington.com/podcast, and we will catch you next time.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tech Done Different Podcast. with Ted Harrington. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.